From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, which is rapidly becoming the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it's based around this culture of love, like helping one another, helping your fellow entrepreneur succeed. And we launched something called the Growth Factory 4 or 5 years ago, and we've invested into, 75 companies so far in the last 4 or 5 years, and we plan to invest in a lot more. But we've helped thousands over the last several years, and it's really about what makes Sacramento strong and what makes America strong is when we have a thriving business community, thriving small business, good things happen for all of us. So that's what it's all about. And I've enjoyed on this show sharing stories of very interesting people. Sometimes they're entrepreneurs, but really, I like to spend time with people that fascinate me. And today on the show, we have a guy by the name of Tony Lopez. He is a news anchor with CBS Sacramento. That's Channel 13, for those of you that are not watching the news at 5 o'clock and so on. But Tony is a guy that has got this enormous background in building media companies, and he's also doing public speaking. So we're going to talk about media, public speaking, just the fascinating life and the stories that you cover. Welcome to the show, Tony Lopez.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be here. I love this energy. I told you when you walk up to the room, to the actual facility, start here. And that just gives you a fresh, like, okay, let's start the day. Let's start an adventure. Let's start anew. Yeah. And it's awesome.
Let's win the day, baby.
Each and every day. And you know who's smiling upon us right now? Our late, great buddy, Greg Van Dusen. I'm thinking about him driving over here and all the things that he's been able to do and influence our lives as we move forward. So I know he's looking down, smiling right now.
I think he's got to be, because it was right here in this office, right here where we're doing our podcast, where Greg and I were, I think we talked about this the other day, Greg and I were shooting a breeze for some charity event that we were putting on. And I asked him the question, how do I get a radio show? And he started texting a guy by the name of Scott Marsh. And next thing you know, I'm doing a show on entrepreneurship of all things. And it's been a fun ride. It's led me to meeting really cool people. It's led me to the Growth Factory and all the angel investing and venture investing that we do. But it's kind of launched a new career. And so, yes, thank you, Greg. Thank you for helping me launch this new career. And originally introducing me to you a number of years ago. So
absolutely.
So maybe with that said, Greg was obviously responsible for doing so many things in Sacramento around raising youth sports, and Sacramento Kings and other pro sports in Sacramento. Walk me back to when you came into the Sacramento region and what you did in the media. And then maybe at some point you can share like how you interacted. How did you meet Greg?
Yeah, absolutely. No, one of the best parts of the job is to meet all sorts of people, right? And to surround yourself with good people. So I'm happy to be doing that. Started in 2005 in Sacramento. Came here from Denver to launch the 4 p.m. newscast. My wife's family's from here. I'm from L.A. So it was a no-brainer. We had one child at the time who was three.
She's in charge, basically.
She's basically in charge. No joke. I was at a Rockies game in Colorado, and we were kicking in the tires, going, okay, I think we're going to move, put the house up for sale, we'll see. She called me during the game or texted me, we have a buyer already for the house. So she was anxious to come back to California and spend time with family. So we got here in 2005 and just hit the ground running, just anchored the 4 o'clock news and reported for Nightside at the time. And then it evolved into the main anchor gig. I do the 5, 6, and 10 p.m. on CBS 13, KOVR 13. And it's just been, you know, it's been gone in a flash. As you know, when the years go by, you're like, wait, when did I just do that? And now it's going to be 35 plus years in the business. So,
well, congratulations on such a successful career. And I'm sort of curious, we see you on TV, on that side of the camera. How much of your occupation is being out in front of the camera versus all the other things that are associated with telling a great story?
Yeah. Well, when I'm on, I'm on. And I do a really good job of kind of decompressing because the news can get overwhelming. And I think we've talked about this before. If you pay attention to every little thing, i.e. sad story, tragic story, it's going to weigh you down. So I'm able to turn my brain off when I'm not in the studio. But at the same time, doing things like this, public speaking, emceeing events, which I do a lot of, and then the keynote speaking addresses that I'm going to be giving, all of that is kind of, you know, melted within what I do. But I'm able to kind of like say, okay, I'm on right now for a half hour show presenting the news of the day, and then in a different capacity, just representing the station, of course, and who I am in the community, but just kind of trying to do good and give back.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk a little bit about how you're developing your public speaking career. I have been at events where you have emceed, and you bring a ton of energy. You are very professional, but when you're doing a keynote, that can be a little bit of a different animal. What is your style in terms of keynote? Maybe give us something educational for ourselves, because we all want to become better communicators. We want to learn to get better at, you know, doing what we do, influencing people. So maybe tell us about your style and the kinds of things that you like to share, like to speak upon.
Right. Well, we've all heard good speakers talk about their lives. Maybe they've written a book, or they have, you know, a podcast or whatever, and they discuss what they've done in their career. A lot of athletes go up and talk, and they are great people. A lot of other people get up and discuss their lives. But from a standpoint of putting yourself in the audience's seat, like, what am I going to get out of this? Interesting, but what can I, you know, the whole phrase, what tools can I put in my toolbox to use and pull out? So from a standpoint of getting up and giving a keynote, you have to have a benefit of what are they looking at me to get out of. So in terms of communicating under pressure, something that is one of the things I'll be talking about is what I do every day on TV. Obviously, it's, you know, it's more controlled with the teleprompter and the words. But in terms of communicating and talking to you, Mark, right now, we all have things in our lives going on. So how do you put that aside to still get your message across, whether it's closing a deal, whether it's trying to connect with someone down the road, what have you? It's a matter of everyone has to do it, too. You know, making a decision under pressure is different because we can kind of sleep on it, talk to the wife or the husband or the loved one about it, and everyone can circle back to make a decision under pressure. But for communicating under pressure, we have to do right then, right there. That audience is right there. So that's the moment, right? So how do you put everything aside that you're dealing with in life to be present for the moment to communicate no matter what's happening?
When I do a keynote, I have a framework, and I'm wondering if you have a framework, and maybe we can talk about, walk it through your topic of communicating under pressure. I don't know if that's the exact topic, but my framework, I learned it, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, and it's stuck with me, and it's just been something I fall back on. And you and I talked about this. Begin with connection, right? Having an audience connection, and then I like to take the audience from a journey from why to how. And then at the end, hopefully there's a compelling call to action. We can actually get them to come away with something or maybe make a change that they're considering making. So on you, I don't know if you use a framework like that or something different, but similar. I'd like to hear that. And so I'm also curious, like, how do you connect with an audience? So I've heard you up there speaking, but there's so many people that just talk at you. Some people are really good at getting you to take, I don't know, come up and want to get involved in the story.
Yeah. You know, I think that from a standpoint of connecting with the audience, you know, on TV, it's a different animal because you don't see people and, you know, you're looking at the camera, but you're visualizing them at home in the kitchen, in the living room, what have you, watching you. So in front of an audience, it's a lot different. I get a lot more, not a lot, but I get a little bit nervous in front of the faces because they're right there. And I'm so used to being in the studio where you don't have a lot of people. And if it's for an event, sometimes it's more difficult to communicate because they're doing their thing and they're wrapping up dinner, they're having a couple of drinks. So for keynote, I think the spotlight is on you more, and I think you'll have more of the audience's attention right away. Yeah, so you
more
have
more than
that.
A emceeing and a charity event or something like that, they're, you have to get their attention so that you can run the show.
For sure.
But when they've come to see you or come to listen to your message, normally they're listening, but still them really connecting with what you're talking about is seeing themselves in the topic.
Yeah. I like to think of things in threes, and I encourage people to do that too when they have a lot on their plate. Let's just break it down into three things. It seems to, our brain seems to kind of welcome that number for some reason. So when I do communicating under pressure, I talk about three stories, instances in my career where I've really had to do that and put everything aside to focus on it. And these are real stories that I've done. So I tell the story of for example, the hurricane is coming, being in Texas and covering a hurricane. So what happens when you're on live TV and the video, the great video you just shot with your photographer of the winds whipping and the waves crashing, and what happens if that video rolls in reverse while you're on live TV? And you hear in your ear, you know, the IFB, you hear in your ear, you remember the old, of course, we all remember the old cassettes that rewind, you hear that sound like, what's going on? And then you're told in your ear, that was a bad feed, you're on live, coming back to you. So you have to own that moment when your message kind of goes sideways, right? So how do you, whatever profession you're in, whatever job you're doing, how do you stay on topic and withstand the storm within the storm? And so everyone has dealt with that. And again, that's why I go back to, we all have to do it. If I would have tossed it back to the station and said, okay, well, we're obviously having technical problems, we'll get back to you later, I lost that moment. So at the time is when you kind of have to look around and say, okay, I got to continue the story. It's not going anywhere. The video didn't roll as I wanted it to, but guess what? I'm going to look around and see where we're at. And thankfully, in that storm, it was a hurricane one, so it wasn't a huge hurricane, but it was big enough to cause, you know, some minor damage and some flooding. It hadn't hit yet, but I was standing literally on the beach in Corpus Christi, and I said, okay, I looked around and I just saw things happening. I saw a huge piece of wood that ended up being part of a pier that washed up on shore, so I walked over to that. So I said, okay, well, it's not going how I wanted it to go. That video's not going to roll because there was a problem. So what can I do to still get my message across? And it ended up being more powerful because I took advantage of the live opportunity to say, okay, here's what we have happening right here, right now. We're going to get to that video in later newscasts, which we did. But how do you, as a business person, as someone, whatever profession you're in, how do you stay on course when that wasn't supposed to happen? A lot of people say, okay, I'm going to close my laptop and sorry, that data didn't come through. The information wasn't provided to me in time. So let's circle back and meet. You may never get that moment again. Somebody may be watching you for the first time and go, okay, well, what's this guy got? What's this person have? Well, if you're not going to have anything, then I'm not going to come back and watch you. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a second meeting, I mean, it's
is there a certain technique? I'm envisioning really stressed. I'm sure that was an extremely stressful moment, but something that could happen in business where, let's say, a CEO has got his team together to discuss some difficult things, that a pivot that the business is going to have to make, and an employee from the outside or from the back asks a question that the CEO wasn't expecting, and that person has to think on their feet and how they're going to deal with communicating effectively during an unexpected scenario.
Yeah. The two phrases that I actually used to write down, and I say them in my head to this day, when I want to make sure that my communication is intentional and thoughtful and not rushed. And I learned this a long time ago. The two phrases are, now let's go through this carefully. It forces you to slow down. Because you want to get your message out. You maybe want to talk, but energy equals intention. It doesn't equal rate of speed, how you talk, or volume. A lot of people make that mistake when they first start out. I'm going to be energetic and intentional, so I'm going to be loud, or I'm going to try to sound like a newscaster should sound. But your energy equals the intention. My intention is to slow down and communicate with you. So now let's go through this carefully. Kind of just forces you to say, okay, let's take this a step at a time. I mean, there's a reason why Mr. Rogers had the yellow blinking light before the show that everybody maybe saw and looked away. Pause. Take a step. Take a second.
Let's go through this carefully.
Now, let's go through this carefully. Say it to yourself. Write it down. You can even say it out loud.
And you could, that you could even frame that with a tough question. A tough question comes from maybe a disgruntled employee or a frightened employee or any scenario that is really stressful and you've got to handle it on your feet. You could just repeat it back to them. Well, let's go through this carefully. Almost giving yourself, buying yourself time to regroup, to show the authentic you and walk through how the decision was made.
Exactly. And it shows them that you care. I mean, just the word carefully, you know what? You're taking time to do that. Another one that I fall back on is, here's what I'd like you to know. Here's what I'd like you to know. What, giving you the value and just personalizing it. Like, here's what I'd like you to know right now. And then go from there. But those two things I've used for forever in terms of getting the message across no matter the situation and making the person feel like they're the only one in the room, which, you know, many times they're not.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And your, what's the most stressful story that you had to cover so far?
I always fall back to this because I always try to come up with a different answer, but it never resonates. It was, and I talked to you about this briefly, I think over lunch, it was witnessing an execution at San Quentin Prison, media witness to an execution. And it happened right after I got here in 2005. Stanley Tookie Williams was the leader of the Crips gang in L.A., notorious worldwide, really. And this is back when San Quentin would put people to death in the death chamber. And my boss at the time, Steve Charlier, he said, I'm going to put your name in the hat to cover this as a media witness. I hadn't been in California for a while, so I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that there are media witnesses to executions.
That was sort of a perk of some kind, or that was a an honor to do that? Or?
Well, I mean, media witnesses are part of the process, or they were when they were doing that. So for every execution, there's been a media witness. It's part of,
okay.
of
only they, one media witness.
Well, it depends. I mean, okay. One from the region. So I would have been, and I was, the only Northern California TV anchor reporter doing. There are other print people and online people, radio, things like that. So I just, you know, I knew that there was a lot of people putting their names in the hat. There was a well-known person being put to death. So I think I was one of a couple of hundred at least. So the odds of being chosen, I was like, ah, yeah, sure, go ahead. And then turns out I was chosen. And so the strange part about that, Mark, was I write down notes to tell stories. But this situation was you don't have anything in your hands. You get into this archaic octagon-looking death chamber, which is what it was, and you watch someone be put to death and you report on it. So having to watch that, put aside your opinion on the death penalty, how bad a dude he was, what he did, and all that other stuff, but the fact that you're watching a healthy human being walk in at midnight, and then turned out it was half an hour later they were put, they breathed their last breath, and then talk about it. It was,
you,
it
did
was
you have tough. To talk about it right afterwards?
Relatively quickly. I mean, it was, I was on the morning shows for a number of different affiliates around California and other parts of the country. So yeah, I mean, afterward they put us on a bus, took us to kind of a holding center to continue our jobs. We did a little press conference and as witnesses, and then it was time to go on the air and talk about it. So it was something I couldn't talk about or chose not to for like 6 months, not even to my wife, because it was just, it was really, it was tough to watch. And so, but yet I had to turn around and talk about it on live TV. So that's when I had to fall back into, now let's go through this carefully. You got to take emotion out of it as much as you can. We're emotional beings, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the second part of what I talk about in terms of communicating under pressure is how do you put emotion aside when you still have to deliver the message, you know? And it's something that you could work on and hone that skill, but it's okay also to say, all right, this is affecting me, but get past that because people still want to hear the message.
How do you do that?
You stay in the moment as much as possible. I mean, you know, as I was watching it, I was saying to myself, how am I going to report this in a way where it's not too emotional? I mean, I let some of my emotion out saying, yeah, I'm not going to lie, that was brutal to watch. but here's what happened. And you go through the sequence of events. You talk about the room where it happened. You talk about the fact that there was trouble. The person administering the injection, which was lethal injection, had trouble finding a vein. So you talk about things like that, how he lifted up his upper torso as if to say, what's happening? Are we going to do this or what? So all of those things, so you stay with...
It sounds like you still have the mental image in your mind.
Oh, yeah,
today.
For sure, yeah. So you just stick with what you saw.
Not the facts, the who, what, when, why, where,
yeah,
how.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's similar, you know, maybe a lesser extent, but if somebody has to hop on a plane to go to an important business meeting, but their kid was up sick all night and their wife was worried and, you know, you're still making that trip. So how do you get that emotional part over here while you still do your job? I mean, I still had a job to do, which was report on an execution and talk about what happened. So that was the most impactful story in terms of staying with me. There's obviously more, you know, much more inspiring stories that I've done, but that one was resonated.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about an inspiring one in a second. I'm curious about breathing, and I have never thought that much about how breathing can affect your communication. But I've been doing yoga for the last several years, and there's a big focus on breathing. And almost a lesson on how to breathe to withstand pressure situations, how to withstand pain, mm-hmm. you know, being uncomfortable. And we've all heard the term, oh, you got to take a deep breath before you speak. And I think there's a lot of truth in that being an effective way to convey a message is where you've taken a breath prior. Mm-hmm. Do you do that when you're public speaking, or do you have a, let's call it a pregame ritual that you walk yourself through?
Yeah, yeah. A couple of phrases. I say these every day, but I especially hit them hard when I have to go in front of people. There is nothing you need to do right now except quiet your mind, relax your body, and calm your nervous system. You're giving yourself permission to be still as you possibly can, and to be present, right? So another thing that I say is there's nothing more important than what's happening right here, right now. So again, it tries to take you to that present moment. So the breath work is hugely important, as you know. I mean, yoga is such an important practice for people that need to slow down. And in my world, in your world, where you have all these things happening, you have to take a breath and say, all right, what's happening?
Well, you and I were talking, I think, about coaching football. I'm coaching eighth grade tackle football, and it amazes me about how we breathe when we are tired. You see these kids running sprints, and they're exhausted, and they get into that, you know, kind of almost like a hyperventilating state, which can... You're not taking in as much oxygen. And what I have found, what I've learned just in the last 5 years or so, is that when you take a deep breath in, it's also important to take a deep breath out, you know, get all the air out of your body, and then that slows down your breathing so that you're actually able to get better use out of the oxygen, and you're able to run the next sprint or answer the next question effectively if you've taken the deep breath in and out.
Yeah. I used to have anxiety whenever breaking news would happen back in the day when I first started, and I had to give the information out as it was happening. I had someone in my ear. I had, you know, notes, where am I going? And I could feel my heart race a little bit, right? And I'm like, okay, I'm kind of going in a direction where I don't want to go. So that's when I learned to slow down and take the breath, you know, and then, like you said, exhaling it. And then it just helps you just be more centered and be aware, because half the battle is recognizing what's happening. So many people get into trouble when they get out of breath, or they get, you know, restless and breathless, and they lose their message. When you recognize it's happening, you can still correct it before it gets too far down the road where you're like, whoa, what is happening right now, you know?
And as far as your public speaking as an occupation, who is the target customer? Is this a corporation that wants you to communicate with the team, or a group of business owners getting together as part of a club? Mm-hmm. Who's the right audience?
Yeah, it's all of the above. I mean, I work for CBS Sacramento, and everything I do has to go through them in terms of not being a conflict of interest. Mm. Nothing too political, nothing that's going to be, you know, bordering on
nothing political in media.
Come on, well, maybe to a point,
because you're representing the station. Yeah, we represent ourselves in our work, but I represent the Growth Factory as well and the other businesses that I own. So I can see making sure that you don't do anything that would put the organization in a, I don't know, a lesser light.
Right. Nothing partisan, I should say. Just, you know, stay middle of the road. But to answer your question, you know, in terms of keynote speaking, I kind of do that every day on TV, but this is to specialized organizations and companies and nonprofits that would like to hear stories about someone having to deal with communicating under pressure or embracing change and things like that, and still using it for your employees, whether it's 100 people or 500.
Okay, so I want to talk about inspiring stories as well, because when we turn on the news, it's filled with things that are less inspiring, and occasionally there's some inspiring things that happen on the news. I get inspired by a sports story of something or something heroic that happened. And I was sharing with you the other day about this really inspiring story. So I'll tell it real quick for the audience, because to me, I was inspired by, I guess it made me think of football a little bit, because there's this animal, the dog, on the 4th of July, and it got scared by the fireworks in the Bay Area. And I think it ran out of the neighborhood and jumped off the bridge, the Dumbarton Bridge, into the water, and then it swam all the way to shore. And the first responders got there, as I hear the story, when the first responders got there, the little tiny dog's face was pecked all over by birds, probably seagulls, and it was bloody and it had wounds all over its face. So I was imagining this little puppy swimming all the way to shore while birds are trying to attack it and potentially eat it for dinner. And it made it the entire way. Yet the dog was so afraid just of fireworks. It showed so much courage and heart to make it all the way to shore under that set of circumstances. And it made me think about football in the way that I think all of us have an animal instinct inside of us, and we get so, I will call it, we are humanized in such a way that the true animal instinct doesn't come out. We're so used to all the different comforts and things like that, that the little things that we're stressing about are really so minor as compared to survival and where our natural instincts and the fight or flight, and when it's time to fight, you go. And being able to tap into that as a football player it takes a lot of getting your mind right, and I think it can make you a much better athlete, a much better football player. And to me, it was a really inspiring story about this little dog, and what can I learn from it? What can I take away from it? So I shared my story I just heard from my wife who got this information on Facebook, but it's a true story from a Bay Area media company. I'm kind of curious, what story or stories have inspired you in a way where you want to talk about it, because it's something so inspiring that you just want to share it with other people?
Yeah, I love that story. I'd love any story about animal survival and going back to used to have a coach in baseball that said, put your blinders on. Obviously there's things happening, there's distractions, but boom, what's in front of you right now? You know, and obviously that dog was just determined to fight for survival. Just keep swimming, huh? I love those types of stories. I would love for us to do nothing but those stories on the news, but obviously we have to cover the news of the day. We do have those stories, and I think from an audience standpoint, you know, I'd like for them to give us a little bit more of a chance and time to get to those, because we're not going to start the show off with, you know, maybe we would, but in terms of getting to those inspiring stories, we have those in our toolbox, and I would like to see us do more of them, and we will. But it's just a matter of the way the news cycle is flowing and what people want to know about. But
okay, can we talk about the media then, just generally?
Sure.
So generally, the media has changed over the last several years. Since you got into the business, you know, we were still reading newspapers. You know, people were getting paper delivered to their house. They were turning on the evening news all the time. Streaming wasn't the thing at today. Social media wasn't a piece of the game. So maybe walk me through a little bit of that evolution, and how are you feeling about the changes generally? And maybe share some insights as to how we might want to think about the media landscape generally, and maybe even where it's going.
Every business changes, right? And for some reason, the people in the media think that it's not going to change, or, you know, what we have to do in terms of communicating, that doesn't change. But I've seen a lot of friends that get frustrated to the point where, I'm not going to do that anymore, so I'm going to pivot and do something else. More power to them. They've done great, and I love them for it. But when you put yourself and so much time into one profession, just because something changes, I don't think you need to pull the plug and do something different. But I mean, I've been doing this for so long, and you're right. Right here, right now, let's start with right now. We have a new AR/VR set, augmented reality, virtual reality, where it's just a giant, I call it a green bathtub, because all around you is just nothing but green floor, green walls, everything. So you can't see, unless you're looking at the monitor, what's behind you. So that has changed dramatically, because you obviously can't look to your side and see something that's happening. You have to be aware of that. So go back decades, and you were sitting behind the desk. I think we talked about, I was able to wear shorts and just business from the waist up, you know, because you're just sitting behind a desk. Paper scripts, I remember having to rip copy and tape them together back in the day when I interned in LA at a station, running it through the teleprompter machine. And now we have artificial intelligence teleprompter. Mm-hmm. So you have to trust. And that's a big word when it comes to changing businesses, changing professions, changing anything. You've got to trust that you could evolve and go with the flow with those changes and be all in on them. I mean, you shouldn't be like, okay, I'm up here, so I shouldn't have to do this. I shouldn't have to write teases or run my own prompter or do this. You do what you have to do to continue what you love. And so in terms of embracing change, it can make you a better communicator, because you're willing to accept it. And remember, someone's always watching you, being a young person climbing up, somebody who maybe is just observing. So as leaders, no matter what profession we're in, we sometimes forget that we are leaders, because we just do our own thing. We might be more casual about it. We focus, and we forget that someone's watching us. So whenever something happens that is going to necessitate change, how we react to that is huge. So the business has changed dramatically. We're still communicators. We now, more than ever, I think community journalism and local news, hyper important, whether it's the fire that's up in the foothills, whether it's the measles outbreak, whether it's whatever in your community that might be happening. So I think people will always gravitate toward local news. And I think it's up to us to find those stories that matter to people.
I think using the word trust, I think people trust local news. They trust their local politicians for the most part in these small towns. Like you live in Roseville. I live in Rockland, or excuse me, my office is in Rockland, Loomis. The leadership there, I trust them. I don't have this deep distrust for the people I know, the people that share the local news, because it doesn't seem as partisan, I guess. We're just trying to do the right things for our community, and there's a unifying theme that I think can happen locally, maybe easier than on the national, because if we think about the national media, I think they're filled with a lot of distrust, and people have found reasons to not trust the national media as much, and social media as well. Social media can be very divisive, and it can be, there's nobody checking the facts, mm-hmm. right? Really, I mean, I guess we can find a way to check our own facts, but not all of it is true. And so you have to be able to sort through what's more believable than other things. But you, I don't feel that as much on the local level. It's just a little bit more of a trust-building group of people.
Yeah. I think consumption habits is huge. I think so many times people fall back on blaming the media or not trusting the media, whether it's national or what have you. But think about it. We think about what we're going to have for dinner, what we're going to eat at the buffet, if you will, what we're going to put into our bodies from a nourishment standpoint. We should do the same thing when it comes to information. Because so many times we're just like, oh, well, that's not true. That's not, you know, okay, well, watch what you consume. Don't go back to that source that you're questioning. So in terms of being quick to judge and to criticize the media, what are you doing to control your consumption?
Oh, I love that. Look in the mirror. If you're getting targeted on your social media by divisive or content you don't agree with or something that puts you in a bad mood, that makes you feel divided, well, then maybe you shouldn't get on that social media, or you should unsubscribe or whatever so that you're not targeted. But yeah, it's a choice. It's a personal choice.
I write this down in my journal every morning. Today, I will make reasoned choices that align with my health and well-being. If you can do that most of the time, it's tough to do, but if you can do that most of the time, you're going to have a pretty good day. And that goes along with what you eat, what you drink, what you consume from a media standpoint, because it's everywhere. It's everywhere, and you could be bogged down. I grew up watching it because my oldest brother was in TV, so everybody watched the news when Dave was on. So I was like, okay, that's my family's consuming that, so I am. But that's what also led me down the path to doing what I'm doing. So, but we just have to be smart about what we put into our minds.
That's the best answer I've heard about this topic. You hear about people, there's armchair quarterbacks in all parts of our life, but to take personal responsibility is such a basic set of positive advice. You know, it's just so obvious, mm-hmm. right? What you consume.
Yeah, and it's easy to fall back on excuses. We all have those. But like you said, man in the mirror, you're responsible for your actions. And that includes deciding what to watch. I mean, we want you to watch CBS 13, KOVR, absolutely. And I'll, you know, be as engaging as possible. But you also have to remind yourself, not everyone's going to love you or like you. You know, you got to put those aside. And that's the same thing for business people and CEOs and entrepreneurs. You can't please everyone, but you can please yourself to the point where, am I doing the best that I could possibly be doing?
Agreed. So we talked about Greg Van Dusen, mm-hmm. but are there certain people from Sacramento or beyond that our audience or I might know that were mentors or that you looked up to as you built your career? And then maybe secondarily, who maybe outside of people that we know was inspiring from maybe your earlier years?
Yeah. Well, I mentioned my brother. He's 18 years older than I am. So when I was 5, he was already on TV in LA. He started as a sportscaster back in the day. So at 6,
that's why you're a Dodger fan.
That number of reasons, right?
Yes. They're a pretty good team.
Yeah, they're a pretty good team. So at 6 o'clock, Dave was on, and I was a little guy, and started watching that. So I followed his career. I was able to intern at the CBS station in LA and follow, you know, him around, and then I just saw that every day was different, and it was not a boring job. You know, you're covering a plane crash one day and an inspiring story about a dog surviving the next day and then what have you. So I knew I didn't want to be bored. As far as people that have resonated with me, you know, and I fall back on this whenever I meet a young intern or a young reporter or someone who's just walking in, you remember the veterans who stop and say your name, who want to know a little bit about you. And Jess Marlowe was an anchor in LA. And in an LA newsroom, everyone is, you know, it's pretty cutthroat. It's like, you know, you're just doing your thing. You're getting that story. Who the heck's this kid? What, blah, 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 blah. And I'll never forget, he stopped and he wanted to know about me. And he was the nicest guy. And I said to myself, if and when I get to that position of being a main anchor, I need to be that way. I need to stop and not put myself up here, but here. I mean, we all have rocks in our pockets. We all put our shoes on. We all do that. So it doesn't matter. And I thought about that when I did the morning show in San Antonio. Get up early, you know, just, I mean, you just have to hop in the car and go for it and drive and be on TV really super early. And I'll never forget living in Alamo Heights, San Antonio, driving down, and there was a baker, and I would always look to see, and he would be starting his day 2-3 in the morning. As bakers are, you know, it's probably middle of the day, but anyway, they're working. And I would always say to myself, you know, his job's not different than mine. I mean, mine's more high profile, obviously, and you've got to be on TV and beyond, but same thing. So when people get into trouble is when ego gets in the way. I mean, ego is the enemy, right? The great Ryan Holiday book, where if you are so enamored with what you do and fall in love with what you do, which is fine, but as long as you stay on this level with everyone else, no matter what they do. So those types of people, Jess Marlowe, Greg Van Dusen, obviously he loved the local news. I got a quick story about Greg because it's so funny. He would watch me religiously. He would watch me more than my wife would watch me, you know, just in terms of like watching the newscast. And he would text me because not anymore, but we'd have our phones next to us in case there was some sort of social media thing we had to look at or breaking news or whatever. So he would text me during the show to comment on the show itself, and he would also try to get me to incorporate phrases that he wanted me to show. Hey, see if you could say this, I'll buy you lunch if you could work this into the next script. Sometimes I would,
wow.
But sometimes it would be like, you know, off the wall. I'm like, oh, I can't say that.
Yeah, he's wanting you to figure out a way to keep the kings here because right. He was really, an important part of Sacramento professional sports.
Oh, huge.
And keeping, you know, putting us on the map.
Yeah, huge. You know, Greg turned me on to the story about old Arco Arena and the efforts to build a baseball stadium. And he said, yeah, did you know there was a secret tunnel under old Arco? Like, what? So I looked into it. Sure enough, they had, with plans to build a baseball stadium, which they started, they had a tunnel going from Arco, you may know this already, mm-hmm. all the way, you know, onto the baseball field. And those little hidden facts that only people like him would know.
He knows, yeah. Okay, what did I not ask you? I want to make sure that we sort of cover as much as we can about Tony Lopez and your life and just maybe any other learnings that we might be able to get from you in the next few minutes.
Well, I mean, I appreciate the time. I really I've admired this show for a while, and I love the fact that you give people the voice, whether it's an entrepreneur or business people. I, first and foremost, husband, father, family man, and I know that is so important to keep you grounded no matter what you do.
Son is really successful too, right? He's a PhD student at UC Davis.
Not PhDs. He's going to law school.
Law school. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I knew it was some professional thing.
No,
okay.
Yeah. He's going to start soon.
That's awesome.
Super proud of
him. Congratulations to him.
But as far as, you know, being a communicator, I love being a part of this community and being on CBS Sacramento for so many years. So much has changed. And I know that news consumption has changed. Viewership just is down across the board for every single media because we have so many choices on where to get the news. So I just try to be the best communicator as possible with the news of the day. And you can take what I say and use it or not. I mean, we're ultimately salesmen, right? Salespeople. I'm selling you what we have to offer, the news of the day. And for people who take everything in, that's a lot. So how I tell people to watch the news is, you know, if it applies to you, great. If not, well, you know, you can put it aside. But I think with a relaxed approach to delivering the news these days is more important than ever. Because if we scream from the top of the mountain, oh my God, the world is ending, this and that, that's why it's so important to stay measured in your delivery of what's happening. Because people have enough to worry about, you know.
Thank you for that.
But and then to pivot to the keynote speaking, I was approached by it, and CBS is kind enough to let me do that to some extent. It's only going to enhance, you know, the product and people maybe seeing me on stage and going, oh, okay, I'll check that guy out in the news. And, you know, we want people to watch, that's for sure, because that translates into ad revenue and things like that.
Well, thank you for sharing some words of wisdom today, and also some, I think there's some actionable things that we can do for ourselves if we want to communicate better under pressure. And thanks for being human. You're humanizing this face that we see on TV. You're really just a human. You're just a normal guy.
Well, it's important. It's important to just, like I said, just be comfortable in your own skin no matter what. You know, I said a long time ago, the day you stop worrying about what other people think about you is the day you really start living. I'm not saying don't be nice, don't be kind, because that's first and foremost hugely important. But if you take all the external opinions about yourself out and just worry about what you are thinking about yourself, that's all that matters.
I love it. So freeing. Well, thank you, Tony. I appreciate everything, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.